You know, it's really kind of astonishing when you think that cats were wild animals not that long ago. Today, they're not just pets. They're family members, surrogate children, even therapists. And before long, they could be more. Science writer David Grimm believes cats and dogs might be on the verge of legal citizenship. Steve Paulson asked him how that's even possible.
David, there are now cat videos that get 20 million hits. How do you explain this? How do we get here?
Well, Steve, it's been a long journey. Cats, we probably domesticated, where the thinking goes, about 10,000 years ago. In fact, some of the earliest evidence for cat domestication comes from a burial in the Mediterranean island of Cyprus. Archaeologists scanning around there in the early 2000s dug under a home, and they found a skeleton of a human, and very nearby, about a foot away, decorated with seashells, was the skeleton of a cat, and they were arranged that the cat and the human appear to be looking into each other's eyes. And this is the very first evidence we have for potentially the beginnings of cat domestication. This is about 9,500 years ago.
So there's this question of whether cats were domesticated basically as pets, I mean, sort of, you know, to become family members as they are now, or were cats treated as something they were kind of useful to have around to eat the rodents, for instance?
Yeah, they were very much, I think, seen as working animals. And the idea is they actually kind of domesticated themselves, which for any cat owner is probably not a surprise that cats would do something themselves. I think the idea early on was this was very much a co-worker relationship. You know, you kill rodents for us, you protect our grains, we'll throw you some table scraps, we won't kill you. Up until we get to ancient Egypt, where they really became very deified in the society. I think a lot of people are familiar with this idea of cats being gods.
What kinds of gods did they become in Egypt?
Well, cats actually became associated with a few very important Egyptian gods. One, Ra, the sun god. Also, Bastet, which was a goddess of fertility, also became very closely linked to the cat. Bastet, curiously enough, was thought to have 9 lives, and she appears to be playing a fiddle.
So this is where the nine lives of cats comes from.
That's one theory, okay. For sure. Yeah, a lot of the mythology around the cat that we have today actually comes from ancient Egypt.
So cats were revered, but then in the Middle Ages in Europe, they were kind of demonized by certain church leaders. Especially, there was a Pope Gregory the Ninth. What did he have against cats?
Well, yeah, the good times certainly didn't last for cats. What we see in the Middle Ages, there was this Pope Gregory the Ninth, as you said, Steve, that lived in the 13th century. His big thing was he was really concerned about the rise of pagan religions. He basically issued this screed that said, here's how you spot heretics. They meet at night, they light candles, and also, by the way, there always is a cat present. And this cat isn't just a cat. This cat is actually an incarnation of Satan. And this is where we really see the first linking of cats with things like witchcraft, evil, Satan. And what was really unfortunate with this screed that Pope Gregory the Ninth issued is that it led to centuries of cat persecution across Europe. You saw cats being thrown into bonfires at celebrations, being hung from trees, being stoned to death so badly, in fact, that cats, it's thought, almost went extinct for a while in Europe in the Middle Ages.
Now, you say that this whole demonization of cats may be one reason why we had the Black Plague.
Yeah, that's certainly one theory. The black rats actually are the ones that actually carried the plague. And the thought was, as you had the disappearance of cats, you had no longer any cats around to be killing these black rats, and the black rats sort of bred out of control, spread disease out of control. A very hard thing to prove, but it's certainly one thing that's been suggested for why there was such a massive plague that actually wiped out up to half of Europe's population is because you had a lot of cats disappear.
So when did cats start coming back then? I mean, now, of course, we see cats everywhere, but when did they become popular?
Well, I think you start to see a rise of the cats and dogs also as pets in the 1800s. This is when we're seeing a rise in sentimentality in places like Europe and America. People are starting to think about animal feelings. People are living in smaller houses. We used to live with our cousins and our grandparents. Now we're living in more atomic family units. We're seeing all other animals disappear from cities. You used to walk down the streets of New York and there would be horses everywhere. You'd walk around Chicago and there would be pigs and chickens. And all these animals start to disappear. This coincides with less people in the house. And what happens is it really creates this void. We have fewer people in our house. We have fewer animals around us in society. And so we really begin to latch on to cats and dogs as sort of another, sometimes the last living, loving presence in our lives. And that really, I think, helps transform them to pets. And then as the the 20th century progresses, where we become even more and more isolated, and especially in the early 21st century, where we have the rise of the internet, the rise of social media, where we all go out to a cafe and a big group of friends, but we all stare at our iPhones the whole time. I think now more than ever, we have this huge emotional void in our lives, and that really transforms them, I think, from being pets to becoming true members of the family, which is what we really started to see in the last couple decades.
And then there's some question now about whether their legal standing is also changing. I mean, whether, you know, they're not simply animals that we own, but something else.
That's right. It's really fascinating what's been happening in the courts, especially in the U.S. As pets have really transformed into family members, we're starting to see some really interesting cases. People have probably heard about pet custody cases where people are fighting over the cat or dog. And actually, another interesting case involving a cat happened in the late 1990s in Washington, D.C., where a couple of roommates were actually arguing over the custody of their cat. One of the roommates had gotten the cat, and the other roommate argued he was much better guardian for the cat and he should have the cat instead. And the judge agreed, said this person was a better owner and it would be in the best interests of the cat to actually live with this other roommate. So you're starting to have judges talk about pets like they talk about children in custody cases.
There must be a different legal status then if this happens. And I know there's been this move in some circles to grant dogs and cats in particular, the status of personhood.
There is. There definitely has been. And that's very controversial. Cats and dogs are still property, but some people have said, clearly, we don't treat them like property. We really treat them like children to a large extent. So you have seen some groups that have argued that these pets deserve something more than property status, that they deserve something like personhood.
But what does that actually mean, to grant a cat or a dog personhood?
Well, it could mean a couple of things. It could mean just more jail time, more prison time for people that abuse or kill cats and dogs. It also could mean mandatory veterinary care. It's kind of like we have mandatory medical care for our children, that if you own a cat or a dog, that you should make sure that they are healthy. And if you're not, then maybe some sort of pet protective services where you show up at your house and take your pet away if you didn't take good care of your pet. So, a lot of these things sound a little extreme, but that's some of that's in some of the conversation about just what rights should we grant to our pets.
Well, I mean, I would think there would be all kinds of actually very difficult issues. I mean, would it be okay to own a pet? Does that become comparable to slavery then?
That's exactly right. I mean, some people have said if cats and dogs are people, you can't buy them or sell them because you can't buy or sell people. Or you couldn't even maybe even spay or neuter them because that would be a violation of their rights. So when we start talking about things like rights, when we start talking about things like personhood, we get into some really interesting but also very tricky waters.
Well, if you really push this, I mean, you could make the argument that we are on the verge of a new civil rights movement, a civil rights movement for our pets. I mean, it raises the question of, is this really comparable in some ways to previous civil rights movements? You know, I mean, granting more legal status, for instance, to African Americans or to women?
Yeah, this is a really hot button issue because some people in the animal rights community will say, absolutely. First we had civil rights and women's rights, and now it's time for animal rights. But then you have people on the other side say, this is very offensive. How dare you talk about rights for cats and dogs in the same sentence that you talk about rights for African Americans or rights for women? And so you have very passionate voices on both sides of this debate.
You're a cat guy yourself, right?
I am. I've got two cats at home, Jasper and Jezebel. My wife and I have two kids, but we have two cats, and everybody's a member of the family. We had the cats first. The kids came along a few years later, and obviously we prioritize our human children, but we still do treat our cats like members of the family. We still dote on them and care about them, and if they get sick, we rush them off to the vet clinic and we take pictures of them. And the scientific part of me really wonders, how did we get to this place, and why are we investing so much emotional energy in what essentially was a wild animal just a few thousand years ago? So I'm really fascinated by this relationship we have with our pets.
Have you ever posted videos of your own cats on YouTube?
more than I care to recount.
David Grimm is the author of Citizen Canine, Our Evolving Relationship with Cats and Dogs. He talked with Steve Paulson.